You're about to listen to another edition of the award-winning show, Money Matters. My name's Mark Cunaberdi. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult your investment professional before making important investment decisions. The views expressed are opinions only, my opinions only, and may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge Investment Advisors, this radio station, nor its staff, members, or underwriters. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. And please remember, this show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so you will not be able to phone in to the radio station, and market indices referenced may not be accurate at the time you are hearing the show. If you wish to contact me, you can send me an email at mcunaberdi@cambridgesecure.com, or comments on the show can be sent to moneymatters@kvmr.org. Thanks again for listening to Money Matters. Now enjoy the show. Welcome again to the 214th edition of Money Matters, Greasebox, the ECB talks, and more market news. Thank you. Welcoming back you to our edition of Money Matters. Has been some time since we've been on your airwaves. Thank you for having me, and thank you for tuning in. My name's Mark Cunaberdi. Of course, Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. Controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance out of it. It's about your lives and our livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. And Money Matters mailbag. Send me an email asking general market questions, not specific advice, of course, just general market questions to moneymatters@kvmr.org. And that email is good no matter where you're listening to this show. In the United States, of course, moneymatters@kvmr.org. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. Into the mailbag, I always read a few of these every show. And we try not to get political. We try to stay right in the middle of the aisles here. The Club for Growth just released the following statement. R.E. Hillary's Clinton's proposal to overhaul capital gains taxes, Club for Growth President David McIntosh. You could say that Hillary's plan follows typical liberal logic of picking winners and losers, only this time she's targeting investors. The truth is her plan just makes more losers by crushing investors with higher taxes. Some reports say her top rate could be close to 40%. The fact is Hillary wants to punish success in order to grow government, and that means the biggest loser will be our economy. We need a capital gains rate that is consistent across the board. Consistently zero from Club for Growth President David McIntosh. I'd read that she wanted to extend the short-term capital gains tax from a year to, I believe it was 5 years. I'll have to check that. That was out on CNBC and also on Bloomberg. So in other words, right now, if you hold an investment under a year, you pay short-term capital gain taxes on there. And over a year, you pay long-term capital gain taxes, which is less. She wants to extend it out. I believe it was 5 years she wants to extend it out. So that would definitely change things for your tax returns for sure. But we don't give tax advice here on the show. I always say consult a qualified, certified professional accountant for anything on capital gains rates or taxes across the board, of course. And in from MK, I just reviewed the estate show 211. Did you cover getting out of reverse mortgages on another show? No, actually, I did a reverse mortgage show years ago with an agent from Wells Fargo, I believe it was. And we covered how much they cost and my opinion of those. But we did not talk about getting out of those. So that might be, I don't see a lot of people asking me how to get out of a reverse mortgage. But it was a good question. I didn't know the answer. So I may cover that in the future. And we talked about setting up a stock account for my kids. And he picked a couple of securities to teach children how to invest. And he picked a couple of his favorite securities from things that he buys. And I got mostly good emails on that show. Somebody suggested, you know, how do you get kids involved? A lot of good books to get kids involved, but I find they don't read much. But so what I did is I set up a miniature account for my child. And we put real money in there, and he selected some securities, and I had some securities left over. And unbelievably, we have three securities in there. And unbelievably, the two that he selected keep hitting new highs. Go figure. You know, the kids are in tune, I guess, to what's being bought and sold. So far, he's doing pretty good there. What can I tell you? MoneyMatters@KVMR.org is the email to comment on the radio show Money Matters on your community radio station. And I also got a couple of emails on the newsletter absence and the website, moneymanagementradio.com, being offline. And that was offline due to an overhaul, and the newsletter as well. So don't panic. We're getting it online slowly. And so that's coming back. So I had been off the air for a while, 3 or 4 weeks, and newsletter and the website had been shut down. Of course, you can always check out the website of your local radio station, wherever you're listening to the show. The radio show Money Matters emanates from KVMR FM in Nevada City. Markets today, Dow 17,412, down 127. NASDAQ down 86. S&P 2082, down 17. Crude oil, $44.78 a barrel. Gold, $108.920 an ounce. And the euro, if it gets the U.S. dollar, sits at $1.09. So a lot going on in the markets, of course. I'd like to talk about how to analyze investments that you might buy. And it would not be just stocks and bonds, but today we're going to talk about how to analyze and decide on investments such as stocks and bonds. And how to analyze these has many approaches. And some believe it is almost impossible to beat the market indexes by selecting stocks. And some studies tend to confirm this. There was a Wall Street Journal study called the Monkey with a Dartboard Test. You can Google that up. And for those who believe that the market indexes will reflect the market at all times and not a mortal man can beat the market indexes, that is called the efficient market theory. Now, efficient market proponents just buy and hold the broad market indexes or basket of diversified investments for a long-term strategy. Others look at a top-down approach for evaluating investments, and that just looks at evaluating the broad economic factors as a whole, and then they select equities based on what the overall macro economy is doing. We call that top-down analysis. A bottom-up approach looks at an individual company fundamentals, such as balance sheets, income statements, product offerings, and then selecting stocks based on a company-specific prediction. The question here that bottom-up approach analysts look at is, how is the company doing and what are its prospects in the near and far-term future? There's another way of analyzing or placing investments that is called sector rotation. And that aims to buy and sell stocks of companies that are going in and out of favor based on a broad view of the economy. They look at what is in demand, what isn't in demand at a certain point of time, what may be in demand in the future, what is falling out of favor right now. This type of analysis can be industry specific or even geographically based. In other words, we could look at specific geographical areas, such as a particular country, or we can look at a particular industry, whether an industry is coming in favor or an industry is going out of favor. And
those sector rotation analysts will either procure or default on certain, or sell certain industries or geographical areas they feel are either upcoming or downgoing, as if I may say. So that is called sector rotation. There's something called the modern portfolio theory, and that compares the risk of an investment against its potential return, and then assumes that a wide diversification over many assets may minimize risk and obtain the greatest return over a prolonged period of time. That's the modern portfolio theory, MPT, as they say. Then there are, of course, the fixed income investors. This might be someone who may be a bit older or needs particular income, and they look at fixed income investments. They may concentrate on interest-bearing assets such as bonds or other debt instruments, and they may or may not minimize the ups and downs of typical equities like the stock market. They may or may not. Income investors are looking really for income rather than growth as a primary investment reason. Investors in fixed income securities look for steady income and stability, usually more than capital growth. They also have technical analysis. Technical analysis is usually, in my opinion, not really taken on by the average Joe Blow investor. Technical analysts compare visual stock charts. They compare price movements of a stock, stock volume, what they call resistance and support levels. If a stock has bounced along a particular area for a while or has tried to punch through a particular area, if it is a falling stock and it may be bouncing along a particular lower price, we might call that a resistance area. And if a stock is rising and yet can't get through a particular level, we might call that a stock that is going up and hitting a ceiling and bouncing along, that might be a resistance and it has to pop through that. A stock that is falling and bouncing along on a particular level is falling against a support level. So I had those reversed in the first part of that sentence there. They also look at moving averages and other trading tendencies and anomalies, and then they might compare them to historical data. Says, well, what do stocks normally do in the past when we see this type of pattern or this type of accumulation, or we see this type of distribution of a stock? And they may believe that past trading tendencies will repeat themselves in the future in one form or another. That's called technical analysis. Dollar cost averaging is a strategy where the investor buys equities over a long period of time, regardless of price. The key here is to keep investing over time. As stock prices move up, of course, and you're buying on a regular schedule, you would obviously, if the stock price is higher and you allocate the same amount of funds every period, you would obviously purchase less shares because of the higher price of the stock. And if the stock moves down, you can purchase more shares. More shares can be afforded. Adding a certain amount each time period, or even using what we call DRIPs, dividend reinvestment plans, to buy more stock over time in lieu of taking the cash dividend, are the methods usually used to deploy this dollar cost averaging. A dividend, of course, is a payment from the company whose stock you own, may be paid monthly or quarterly or semi-annually or annually, and you can take that distribution in cash or that dividend in cash, or you could tell the company, I'd like to buy more stock with it, and every time you give me a dividend, I want to buy more stock with it. And so that is called a DRIP, a dividend reinvestment plan. Of course, investing regular amounts steadily over time, which is dollar cost averaging, may lower your average per share cost, And of course, this periodic investment program called dollar cost averaging cannot guarantee profit, and it cannot protect you against loss in a declining market. Dollar cost averaging is generally regarded as a long-term strategy involving continuous investing regardless of fluctuating price levels. And as a result, you should always consider your financial ability to continue to invest during the times when prices are fluctuating, of course. And no matter what method you use, or a combination of these methods, being aware of all these techniques and strategies that are available to you and considering the benefits and drawbacks of each, doing so can go a long way in improving your odds at success. Remember, education is the cornerstone of progress. So the more you know about your health and the more you know about investing and the more you know about whatever particular job you may have, obviously can go a long way in improving your odds at success. And that would really be true of anything, would it not? Phone numbers in the booth, 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we will be right back. And you are tuned to your economic forum on your community radio station, Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti, and don't forget you can comment on the show at the email moneymatters@kvmr.org, no matter what station you're listening to this show on. And we are airing live from our studios at 120 Bridge Street in Nevada City. At KVMR Studios, of course, and you may be listening to a pre-recorded or a recorded broadcast of the show at a later date. So if you do, you won't be able to call in live. But if you're listening on Thursday, August 6th, it's 12:25 p.m. at this point in time. And Goldman Sachs, out from Reuters today, Goldman Sachs today joined the view that oil prices will remain lower for longer. And commodity currencies and energy equities remained at levels not seen since 2005. That's from Reuters, Goldman Sachs. Analysts at Goldman Sachs argue that the economic environment for the oil industry has changed fundamentally due to the higher financial and operational stress, declining cost, production gains, and a stronger dollar. They go on to say these differences reflect not only a further deterioration in fundamentals, but also the financial market's decreasing confidence in a quick rebound in prices and a recognition that the balancing of supply and demand will prove to be far more difficult than was previously priced into the market, a Goldman Sachs analyst said in a report that was out from Reuters just about a couple of hours ago. And we may have seen that Saudi Arabia may have affected the eventual fall in oil prices, and, of course, the plethora of shale oil may have provided that fall. And so Goldman, at least, maintains its near-term target for U.S. crude at $45 a barrel, but warns that risk is skewed substantially lower. That is reported by Jacob Green, Groundhall Peterson, edited by Clarence Fernandez, again out from Goldman Sachs on Reuters just a few hours ago. How do you feel about lower oil prices? Is it good at the gas pump for you? Well, I hope so. I thought prices were low to fill my car at $250, but I think I paid $360 today. So they seem to be not as low as I'd like them, for sure. I'd like it at a quarter a gallon. I remember seeing that in Sonoma when I first got my license at 15 and a half. Going to Sonoma and seeing it for 24.9 cents a gallon. Wow, that really dates me, doesn't it? Of course it does. So onward in Money Matters today. Thanks for joining me today and tuning in to learn about the world around you, the economic world around you, and what they're doing up there and what we're doing down here. And I've done many commentary on Obamacare. And the Supreme Court rules that the wording in Obamacare is sloppy but valid. So about a month and a half ago, a second time a challenge against the Affordable Health Care Act goes unsuccessfully. Whether you agree with the Affordable Health Care Act or not, the facts of its funding remain undisputed. It is thought that more low-income and sick people are signing up than first anticipated, which may mean, in order to pay for itself, more subsidies and higher premiums await. Now, we saw when it was approved by the Obamacare that health care company equities soared on the news. That was out from CNBC. They came out with an article, CNBC, healthcare stock surge on Obamacare ruling. So you can check that out on CNBC. It was about a month and a half ago. Looking at the movements of healthcare, one could draw the conclusion big healthcare may be a major beneficiary of Obamacare. Many argue this is not surprising, as they had a big hand in drafting the actual legislation. Small business may not be too thrilled, however, as the cost for insuring employees obviously would heap more costs on an already strained small business sector. The sector has seen more closures of businesses and startups in the past few years, and that's a first, and that's out again from CNBC. Private individuals may see their own insurance premiums going up more than a few. State health providers are raising rates, and most by a substantial amount. Out from Reuters a month and a half ago, Maryland Care First Choice provider is asking for a 30% increase. Missouri's Coventry Health, 22% increase. North Carolina's Blue Shield wants 25% more. Tennessee is looking at an eye-popping 36% increase. And Wellmark of South Dakota is asking for increases anywhere from 24 to 51%. I think it's safe to say the latest Supreme Court decision might mean good news for those getting their health care paid for, but bad news for those who have to pay their health care by themselves. How do you feel about Obamacare? Every time I touch on this, I get a host of emails both for and against the Affordable Health Care Act, and so I'm always willing to entertain more emails. MoneyMatters@kvmar.org. Let me know how you feel about it. And it's always mixed. You know, it's a hot button for sure. It's a very hot topic. And, of course, they think that the piece of airplane they found out on an island in the South Indian Sea, they think that that is a missing piece of the missing aircraft that has been down since, 14, 15 months ago. So my heart goes out to all those people that just don't know what happened to their loved ones on that flight. But maybe we will finally get a little closure. But the Malaysian authorities have confirmed, in their opinion, that that is a piece of the plane. And France is going to weigh in on that after they have a chance to analyze it in a few days. So we'll see what happens to that. Right now, the Dow at 12:31 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Thursday, August 6th, is down 141 now, and S&P down 18. And then we are still seeing some softness here. So we'll keep an eye on that. And, of course, Greece came back into the news. Greece came back into the news. And what do you think about Greece coming back into the news? We had some market volatility, I would say, that with Greece deciding whether to take a bailout or not. Tsipras, the Greek prime minister, of course, put that to a vote with the Greek citizens. And then the Greek citizens subsequently voted to not take a bailout, which may have meant they wanted to go it alone with their drachma. But the Greeks had shut the banking sector for a few weeks, and they had limited some withdrawals. I think they limited it to about 60 euros a day. And the Greek economy was having a little trouble, obviously, with the banks closed and unemployment fairly high over in Greece. And so about 4 or 5 days after the vote, Tsipras, Prime Minister Tsipras, agreed to the austerity, the further austerity put upon them by the IMF and the European Central Bank. And so they agreed. It had yet to be ratified, but they agreed to continue on with austerity in exchange for some emergency funds and some bailout funds. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial, of course, responded to the Greek bailout news a month back or so by vaulting past the 18,000 level once more. Its ninth time it had done that within the last year. Nine times it had gone through 18,000 and fallen back again. The market's illness prior to, a month back or so, may have been brought about, of course, in part by the fear of a Greek exit from the euro bloc currency. If they would have exited that, they would have had to resort to printing up their own currency, the drachma. And then, of course, that would possibly have brought about new problems. We would have seen some default on Greek debt, possibly. And Greece would have probably issued their own currency, or maybe a combination of currencies. And up until they agreed, Greece had refused demands to continue down the path of austerity and higher taxes. Greece has been mired in recession in part brought upon by the austerity measures required by the European Central Bank, the ECB. Of course, it had two previous bailouts. And now, despite the referendum that were voted on by Greek citizens against further austerity, Greek authorities elected to submit to continued cutbacks to obtain a third bailout. With its banks shuttered and its stock market in free fall, Greek Prime Minister Alex Tsipras bowed to the demands of the ECB in lieu of finding out the alternative being how bad would it get without more funds, and what the future would hold for the Greek economy by withdrawing from the euro currency bloc altogether. Markets worldwide had staggered in the face of a possible Greek withdrawal from the euro, fearing contagion would spread to other indebted nations, who might also then threaten to withdraw from the euro bloc themselves should Greece leave, and them, of course, possibly defaulting on what they owed. So we not only had Greece, the possibility of Greece defaulting on its debt. If they defaulted, other countries might look around and say, hey, Greece got out of its debt by leaving. Why don't we do the same thing? And, of course, the fear would be contagion. Contagion being that if a small country like Greece defaulted on their bonds, then investors might look at other countries that they might hold debt in and get scared and perhaps be concerned about those holdings. So that's the contagion part of it. Of course, we saw some pretty good contagion during the housing and banking blow-up, did we not? As the dominoes went backwards. So much like the banking blow-up of 2008 and 2009, many financial institutions had gorged on Greek debt because of its high yield. We are in a very low interest rate environment, obviously, and that may cause investors to seek out higher-yielding assets to make up for the fact that the yields on savings and treasuries is not historically as high as it used to be. When I was growing up, it was 6% in a bank account. Of course, we can't get 6% in a bank account now. So many financial institutions had gorged on Greek debt because of the high yield. And some, and if some, or all of that debt went unpaid, the ramifications could mirror the same problems we saw when billions in real estate debt went up in a puff of smoke, almost bringing about a worldwide financial implosion. I don't think that's debatable. That's what we almost saw. At least that's what we were told, right? Although relatively small in the grand scheme of things, Greece is not really like Japan or the size of the United States or South America. It's relatively small, and the debt it owes is relatively small when compared to other larger nations. The dominoes of a Greek default could echo through the banking institutions everywhere, where if one institution fell, it could cause many more to do the same. Dominoes could start to fall backwards once again. So Greece capitulated. And with Greece's capitulation and its subsequent bailout funds forthcoming, the problem may seem solved for now. However, some are claiming a real resolution has not been reached. Greece may be back at the table again for another bailout, should current austerity measures not help them crawl out of the huge economic hole they find themselves in. Markets, at least temporarily, rejoiced, with the majority of index and markets soaring on the news. Only time will tell, of course, if we witness a sequel of last month's events somewhere down the road in the future, if Greece remains in trouble and their unemployment remains high and they have all this austerity. We might be right back here, and we don't know how severe the consideration of another Greek bailout will once again affect markets in the euro bloc in general. We just don't know if they come back again what will happen. But for now, that particular crisis seems to be resolved. You are listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and if listening live at 12:40 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on KVMR-FM, you can feel free to call and ask me some questions. 530-265-9555. 530-265-9555. We'll be right back with Money Matters. Welcome back to Money Matters, your community radio station. Remember, the views and opinions expressed on this show are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters, and the information gleaned on this show and announced on this show is gleaned from a variety of public sources, but is not deemed accurate at time of airing. Discussions in this show, of course, should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important decisions. The views expressed here, of course, are opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of anyone but myself. I'm an investment advisor representative through Advisors Cambridge Investment Research, a registered investment advisor. Feel free to call me, 530-265-9555, if you're listening to the show live. Out from bankrate.com, I get a lot of questions on real estate. Is it time to buy? Is it time to sell? Well, I can never tell you one way or the other, but there is an interesting article that I perused at Bankrate Inc. It came out by a gentleman, Poon Kulali Thangavelu. I hope I pronounced that right. That's out on finance.yahoo.com. It's got the Bankrate Inc. logo on it. And they're talking about, are you ready to buy a home? Some things to think about. Weighing the rent versus buy decision. Both have upsides. So before deciding, think about these factors. And then he says, don't worry, we won't try to talk you out of anything. He says, do you want flexibility? Then rent. You are more mobile when you rent because you can move out at the end of the lease. Buying a home, of course, entails a lot of upfront costs, from the down payment to inspections to loan fees. Renting carries fewer upfront costs. He goes on to say, equity is great when you build it. On the other hand, renting does not carry a hidden cost. You don't build equity renting. He says, what is equity? When the home's value rises while the mortgage debt falls, you're building equity. It's like owning a stock whose prices go up. Of course, no one can guarantee which way house prices will go, of course. Neither I or the author of this article here. He goes on to say, home value minus mortgage debt is equity. Well, I think that's pretty clear, right? History shows that home ownership is a pretty good investment, says Malcolm Holland Steiner, director of retail lending sales and production of TD Bank. But home ownership is sometimes a money-losing venture, as victims of the housing crash can attest to. So we always have varying opinions on almost any investment, of course. Own for the long term, in the article is stated. If you have a time horizon less than 5 years, then home ownership, in their opinion, is likely not the right option. It is likely to take as much as 5 years to come out ahead on your purchase after taking into account the costs of buying and selling a house. Of course, again, this is the opinion of the author. Whether his time frame is accurate or not is, to remain to be seen. I remember doing many real estate shows in 2006, 2007, and I had a definite opinion at that time on real estate and said so, and also had a definite opinion on the banking structure in 2006, 2007, and my opinion turned out to be true in spades. In fact, just a few weeks ago, we aired a repeat of a real estate show I did in 06. And I hope you had the chance to peruse that, listen to that. And you can see what I had said in 2006, 2007 about the real estate crash and the banking issues. I did many, many shows, some of them called Debt back then. And You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, long term. Listeners may remember I used to say, you ain't seen nothing yet. And always my call of, it won't be enough, when it related to bailouts. So on with the article on Yahoo Finance. Get ready to be landlord free. Can you afford to maintain and repair a home? Home ownership expenses are not confined to the monthly house payments, of course. There are a lot of other costs associated with home ownership. Housing economist Ralph McLaughlin chimes in. These include things like maintenance on your house, any sort of refurbishment that you might have to undertake, and any sort of emergency repairs. And they go on to say, compare home appreciation with rent. If owning costs more per month than renting, the calculation doesn't stop there. A house may have a good chance of rising in value over the years, even as monthly payments stay about the same. Meanwhile, rent is likely to go up. You have to balance home value appreciation with the upfront costs of buying, says Richard Green, a professor at the University of Southern California, Los Angeles, says, and he offers us this rule of thumb. If house values have to go up about 3% a year over rent for you to break even, if house value prices have to go up 3% a year over rent for you to break even, then depending on your living in a place for 5 years, buying is better than renting. If you have to get 5 or 6% appreciation every single year, then you are better renting from a purely financial standpoint. Again, from Richard Green, a professor at USC. They go on to say, think of school. If you have young children, owning a home lets you lock in your housing costs so you can give the children the stability of staying in the same school district for an extended period. I would add, that might not be true if you had an adjustable rate mortgage, but I don't know how many of those are out there anymore. I'm sure there are a few. And of course, they mentioned tax advantage. Exploit the tax advantage if you can. Another factor is to consider regarding this issue is whether you will be able to deduct the mortgage interest expense. Tax laws allows those who itemize their taxes to write off their mortgage interest payment, which means you pay less for your mortgage. But not everyone is eligible to itemize deductions. And remember, we don't give tax advice here, so always consult your certified public accountant for all your tax issues. And finally, they say, don't make it your primary investment. I've always said that, in my opinion, the reason we got one of the reasons, there are many reasons we got in trouble for housing, is the reason we got into trouble is, in my opinion, people forgot why they own an asset. And I always say this, you got to have to know, be clear in your mind why you own something. I own a shotgun for protection. I don't own a shotgun to make money on it. I may own a dog for protection or an alarm system for protection. I own a car. Most people own a car to get around town in. A few people may own cars to appreciate in value, but I own a car to get around town in. I own a vegetable garden, not to make money on it, although I'm sure there are a few out there that do. I own a vegetable garden for food and for the option of giving me food if I run into trouble getting it somewhere else. I myself own equities and own other things, not to eat, but for other reasons. I think that people got into trouble because they started to think of their house as an investment. I think as my house as a place to live and house my family and stay dry in the rain and fix nice dinners with big goblets of red wine and barbecuing animal flesh or some innocent fish so I can feed myself. I don't look at my house as an investment. So they go on to say in this article, don't make it your primary investment. If you are focused on the investment potential of owning your own home rather than the softer aspects of security and stability, then you might be better off renting. Says Green, the USC professor, the idea that home ownership doesn't carry a lot of risk with it is wrong. If you are in a mutual fund with a long-term perspective, it is probably going to grow faster than real estate values. Housing can be more volatile than you think, depending on location. Now, remember, this is the opinion of Mr. Green, the USC professor, mentioning when he mentions mutual funds against housing value. That is his opinion from this article and does not necessarily represent mine or this station, of course. So that article is available at finance.yahoo.com. It is called Ready to Buy a Home? Some Things to Think About. So you are listening to You Money Matters on your community radio station, and it is about 12:51 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Thursday, August 6th, and the next Money Matters show airs 2 weeks from today, and we are located in our brand new digs, but of course, your community radio station, wherever you're listening to the show, is located in their digs, and I believe in getting involved with your community radio stations wherever you reside. So consider that, of course. We will be right back with Money Matters in just a minute to wrap up the Economic Forum.
Money, get away, get a good job.
And finally, we've talked about interest rates a lot on this show. Of course, the Federal Reserve is threatening to raise rates in September. I have my own opinions on that. But just out today on Reuters again, the Bank of England, the BOE, has pointed to a possible rise in interest rates early next year after one of its top policymakers backed an immediate move. It is suggested and forecasted that the strength of the sterling meant inflation would only pick up more slowly. So they may be a little bit hesitant, but they are threatening to raise rates. Now, we've seen Federal Reserve and other world central banks keep saying they're going to raise rates. But so far, the truth is we haven't seen any rate increases. The Bank of England, Governor Mark Carney, said the bank was getting closer to beginning to undo its stimulus for Britain's economy. He told reporters, "The likely timing of the first bank rate increase is drawing closer." Well, my dad would say, so is the end of the world, but when? That's always great. We go into a restaurant and a lady says, you know, waitress will say, "Your food's coming." My dad says, "Well, so is the end of the world, but when?" And so there you go. However, he goes on to say, Governor Mark Carney of the Bank of England, "The exact timing of the first move cannot be predicted in advance. In short, it will be data dependent." Now, that sounds a lot like our Federal Reserve, data dependent. In other words, we're going to drive depending on what road we see ahead of us. The Bank of England did slash interest rates to 0.5% during the depths of the financial crisis in 2009 and has kept them there since. With the economy now recovering strongly and wages finally rising more quickly, speculation is growing about when it might start to wean Britain off low rates, mirroring the debate at the U.S. Federal Reserve. That is, of course, from our article here from Reuters. They go on to say, most economists in a Reuters poll had expected two or three members of the Monetary Policy Committee over there to vote for a rate hike. But eight voted for it, and one stomped out that expectation. So will we see interest rates rise? Few economists, according to this article here, few economists think the Bank of England will likely move rates before our Federal Reserve, which is expected, as I mentioned earlier, to raise rates this year, per their own announcements. In a large part, because of the Bank of England raises rates before we do, it is thought that that would push up the value of the sterling, so says the article. On Wednesday, the pound hit a highest level against a basket of currencies in more than 7 years. So we will see. They have acknowledged that they know that a recent strengthening of the pound and a renewed fall in oil prices would push down inflation until at least the middle of the next year, and the impact of the rise in the sterling could persist even longer. So remember, we are seeing, especially in the last year or so, the U.S. dollar has gained remarkable strength. And obviously from this article, they're a little concerned about the sterling getting too strong. But one of the upsides, of course, when the dollars get stronger, is that we see commodity prices going down, because there a lot of those are priced in dollars as well. So that concludes another edition of your economic show, Money Matters. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Views expressed are opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station, staff members, or underwriters, and I'm investment advisor represented through Advisors Cambridge Investment Research, a registered investment advisor. You are listening to Money Matters show number 214. Feel free to send me an email at moneymatters@kvmr.org or the program director at the community station where you are hearing this show. My name's Mark. God bless. Go make some money. Have a great day.